Okay, one question that I have, and I don't know if you can answer it, is, and it's been going through my mind for the year 1991, if land is the same as your shares, if the shares are connected with the land, are they?
Well, indirectly they are. This is always something that's hard to get across, but the corporation owns the land,
mm-hmm.
and you have
shares
in the corporation, and
the shares in the corporation are the.
That's the title deeds to ownership of the corporation, so to speak, and if somebody goes into one of these villages and starts buying shares when they get 50% plus one of the shares, then they will own the corporation and
therefore
own
the land.
Yeah.
Seems to me I don't know if it's a solution or if it would make things worse would be separating the land from the shares, and I don't know how that could be. Maybe the monetary aspect, the business aspect of the corporations be the shares where the land would be separated. Because when I look at Jalisco Corporation, it's like Sheraton Hotel or Settlement Bay, whatever that is, Settlers Bay. That's what I picture in my mind as Jalisco Corporation. Aside from us and away from us and not concerned with us. The direct link that they had with us were those, I think it was three checks that we received from the corporation itself. Now, the one that is closer to me is the village corporation, own village corporation, right? Because to me, Jalista is far away, and they've become further and further as the years go by. With the Chivac lands, the one that I belong to, we were told that we were supposed to have six townships. I used to follow the Land Claim Settlement Act real closely at the beginning, and I couldn't understand it anymore, so I don't really follow it anymore, but we were given to choose three townships in Chivac, three townships right in the immediate area, and three townships outside the Clarence Roads Wildlife Refuge. Now, Chivac is surrounded by the Clarence Roads Wildlife Refuge, and our hunting areas and our berry picking areas, our whole lifestyle is mostly in the Clarence Roads Wildlife Refuge. And one of the things I'd like to see is an exchange of lands where the villages acquire lands that they actually use. Whereas, for instance, we were told to choose three townships outside, further up in a place where we've never been, have never used. And
you think this should be a swap with the federal government?
Right. Yeah. We're willing to swap, but I don't know if the federal government is willing to swap, but I'd like to see that. And concerning the shares, I have three children that are newborns, and I've had some inheritance from deceased relatives on the shares. I wouldn't like to see the shares just around the sold. Maybe if a person has to share them, to sell them to natives instead of outside people. If the shares were sold outside of the native population or there, if a person is married to to a native person, maybe that make an exception for those people. But for big businesses and oil companies, now that stuff not to be you know, because they have the money to buy all these shares. I'd rather see the shares stay in our area than outside interests. Doy.
Could I ask you a question? Your point about three different types of Native people, some dependent almost 100% on subsistence,
mm-hmm.
others like yourself half and half, mm-hmm. others really urban. And you say that to lump them all together and make these choices somehow wouldn't be fair. When you say that there are these divisions, are you thinking that within some villages you have all three types of people, or are you thinking that some villages are in category A and some places like Bethel might be more like category C or Anchorage? Were you thinking of individual people or families or villages? Are there villages that you would say clearly are in category A, that is, that they're really subsistence, traditional places?
There's villages that are more, so I wouldn't put them in category A, B, C, and D, but I'd put them more, some villages more in category A than others, like Bethel or Aniak.
Well, let's take Bethel. Where would you put Bethel?
About half and half.
And where would you put a place like Chivac?
More subsistence.
Well, what would you put into category C, the urban?
Seattle.
I see. Right.
Dory?
Yeah, thank you very much. Leanne. That was very, very, very helpful. Yes, yes, please.
We're from Bethel Native Corporation. My name is Ruth Richardson. This is Ron Baker, General Manager. I'm Chairman of the Board. We were, first of all, under the impression that you had canceled your trip to Bethel.
Well,
we actually didn't prepare anything, so we're going to have to go by the notes that we had formulated earlier.
Well, thank you for coming. I'm sorry there was confusion about this, but I didn't know until a couple of hours ago that we could even make it.
Yeah, the weather never cooperates when it needs to. The board of directors of Bethel Native Corporation got together and came up with some pros and cons of ANCSA that we have had to work with, and how, and just in our own experience with having to work with the Act. And first of all, I'll go with the pros, the good one, since it's the shortest. First, the influx of money, I think, is a good thing. How can any corporation start out from nothing, and especially with no experience in corporations? So the influx of money.
Commissioner Berger, my name is Tony Vasca. I don't have an official position as of yet, currently unemployed, but I would like to take a different tact in explaining my personal views of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, as well as some of the views of a lot of people I've heard in the last 14 years, but especially in the last 5 or 6 years. Given what your charges with the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, It seems to me that where you place the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act in the history of the United States government's relations with Native peoples in the United States, it seems to me that the place we take is in line with a lot of the public policy decisions that the U.S. Congress takes over the years. And if you look at the public policy that the United States Congress has taken, it seems to me that whenever it comes to the point of making a decision concerning Native peoples, those decisions are made based on what the current knowledge is at that particular time. Additionally, it seems to me that the changes that are made subsequently will be made to, hopefully, I think from the Congress's perspective, benefit the Native people that the original act was intended to do. A prime example is the 1879 Dawes Act, which in fact gave 160 acres and a mule to each Indian across the country. At that particular point, the newly formed Bureau of Indian Affairs identified that there were approximately 150 million acres of land in American Indian ownership. This excludes Alaska. After a mere 50 years, the loss of lands by American Indians dropped from 150 million acres to approximately 53 million acres in that short period of time. The policy of the Dawes Act simply said, what we are going to do is make regular citizens of American Indians, and the way to do it in 1887 was to make farmers out of them, because then the growing United States was coming out of an agrarian society. Small farms dotted the whole countryside, and in many states across the country you find a checkerboard pattern of Indian, non-Indian ownership of land. This attempt by the federal government to change what basically were identifiable political, cultural, social groups, Indians across the country, to try to change them into regular Americans, I think failed miserably on several grounds. One, the loss of land can be documented, is documented. I've forgotten the name of the book. It's the author's last name is Priest, but he documents that quite clearly. To try to correct that, in 1934, Congress then passed the Indian Reorganization Act, which put a stop to the allotment procedures, which put a stop basically to the Indians in the lower 48 basically losing their lands. At that particular time, there were a bunch of different land claims, litigation going on in Southeast Alaska concerning the Tlingits and Haidas, and that is a history in itself that you might want to look at in terms of how they fit into the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. How the Indian Reorganization Act affected Alaska were through amendments in 1936 to apply to Alaska where Alaska Natives could apply for allotments. And the allotment claims prior to December 18th, 1971 are obviously based on that, and because of the act having passed on that particular date, allotments were no longer given to Alaska Natives. How the U.S. Congress chooses to rectify some of the problems that Alaska Natives point to, presumably this commission has listened to a lot of problems pointed out by a lot of people concerning a whole variety of issues. I've sat through enough of the commission's.
A difference in comments between July and now coming back to this area.
Well, there's a difference in that when you're out in the villages, you hear more about subsistence than you do here in Bethel. You know, that stands to reason. When you're in the Bering Straits region, you hear more about subsistence in Shishmaref than you do in Nome. But still, people here today in Bethel have talked about subsistence. It's important to them, even though they may live here in in a big town. But I found out here in Chilista a pretty unified set of ideas about ANCSA. Whether people are in the village corporations, whether they're in tribal governments, they all seem to have the same concerns.
Okay.
Well, that's all I needed. Okay. Well, that was 4 o'clock on the dot. does anybody else want to say something? I think we're going to wait for those students from the college. Just 1 second. Right. Maybe we could just restore order here, and if Bill Hess would promise to stay away from the Coke machine for a few minutes. Right.
I might
After listening to the testimony this afternoon, I think there's been some disadvantages to the ANCSA bill, which is dividing the village people. Whereas before it used to be ours, now it's I, mine, or this corporations, or the other corporations. And I think there's going to be a lot of competition between corporations. And with 1991 coming up, I think there's going to be a lot of people who will want to sell their shares. Although a lot of people, shareholders, feel strongly about the land and preserving the land, a lot of shareholders don't connect the two, that the shares go hand in hand with the land. And that way, not connecting the shares to the land, I think some shareholders would be willing to sell their shares, although they wouldn't want to lose the land. I think the important thing to do is if there's going to be any changes, is to separate the land from the shares. This is my personal feeling. And getting the 19, the afterborns enrolled. I think the way some afterborns are getting their shares now is by inheritance, and I think that should be continued. I feel that although I have I have three children, one is a shareholder and two aren't shareholders. I see no difference in them, and I see that two non-shareholders feel as native as the shareholder, just as native as the others, and I think it's really not important to them now, but later on it might be. I think the passage of the land claims was the culprit of the oil companies. If it wasn't for the oil, I think there wouldn't have been a passage of the native land claims. And Congress, after dealing with the Lower 48 Indians, wanted to do something different. But village people weren't prepared for corporations or corporate structures, because some villages now aren't even prepared, haven't even selected their lands, the smaller corporations. And I find with Bethel Native Corporation, there's a lot of competition between villages, but we've had a lot of opposition from our regional corporation.
A lot of what?
Opposition.
Opposition.
or not necessarily opposition, but we haven't gotten the assistance from the regional corporation, which I understand is supposed to be aiding the village corporations. That's all I have.
Okay, thanks very much, Ms. Cook. Natives think about the land claim settlement of 1971, and I've been to 60 villages and towns all over the state. I've been traveling for a year, and I've heard from more than 1,400 Native people and non-Native people too, and they've been coming to these meetings to talk about the land claim settlement and to give me their thoughts on it.
Unokoni, Judge Berger. Judge Berger, alo koni, magun koni, Alaska Review Commissioner koni. Mani lu, State of Alaska mi, mani nunakpam ni, nunanun koni, ayagawal kutini koni, Madum Kani, Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act, Dum Kani, Kaisayu Kuchan Kani, Hearing Arkle, and Kodna, Kalao Kaklugu, Kaisin 1400 people, Damatun Nikani, U20, I Bible Magutani, Kasa 20, Testimony less Hosini 20 Maguni hearing on Agum Kani, Kalachiko Kani, Kaisinu Miot Kapchin Kani, Matum Kani, Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act.
So, all over Alaska, Native people have been talking about the land claim settlement, about subsistence, about their way of life, about their concerns, about the future, about their children, and they've been talking as well about 1991, you know, that in 1991 you'll be able to sell your shares in the Native corporations. But if people do sell their shares and outsiders take over the Native corporations, then they won't be Native corporations anymore, and the land that they own won't be Native land anymore. So some of these questions are really important questions, and I'd like to know how you feel about them.
Maguni Kani hearing on the U20 testimony last in it, Magunic subsistence, Nangnaksam, Dungin, Hwasuka, Awani Junak Company Kaisen, Ayuk Serishkan Kani, Hwasu Magutani, Kinuk Sibutani Migilinut, Hwasuka. Madam Kani, 1991, Namtki, Tskan Kani, Doni Kani, U20 Share Right Kani, Magun and Kani, Mark Don and Kani, Kehoni Dame, Kibu Jungare, Luki Hot, Spitun Nari Kare, Luji Damagun Kani Sharon, Magudum Honey Corporation, not my Mambes Kmet Honey Corporation, not Lily B and Sim Kani, Gamagutu Kani Share Right Kani, Dunak Kufjigi. Corporation.